I meant to get the Joe Rogan Experience podcast, but my regex was wrong, so I got Friday Afternoon Deploy instead.
So, yeah, here we are. Yeah. That was natural.
It was another yeah. Friday.
No, in no way contrived. No way what you say when you need to start talking.
Yes. So. That was so natural.
Have you guys ever listened to podcasts where they literally, there are some that do this, they'll just start in the middle of the conversation because they don't want the guests to have that moment. So they'll just start a conversation and then one of the engineers just kind of like sneakily click start at some point. And so you jump in the middle of the conversation.
I've done that for this show.
Yeah.
Especially with guests because I feel, yeah. Cause it can be a thing when you're like, and here we go.
Yep.
You ready? Cause it's happening. So
Joe Rogan, and I'm hit and miss with Joe Rogan podcasts.
Yeah.
I've enjoyed some of those. Some of them I'm just like, there's no point in listening to this.
Sure.
But he definitely has good guests on occasionally. Mm-hmm. But he always counts them in. He's like, 3, 2, 1, and we're here. He's like, all right.
Yeah.
That's pretty consistent. That's on brand for the JRE.
Yeah, for sure. The last one I watched was with the Mushroom Expert.
Ah, yeah. I did the Bernie Sanders one. That's really good. You get to actually hear Bernie Sanders talk like, in full, like complete sentences and just set of sound bites of like, the rich people are taking all your things. Like, it's not just those clips. It's like a full conversation.
Yeah.
So it's really good. Like
Yeah, that one's on my list. That one looks good. It's good to hear that it's like that.
I didn't know he had a podcast. What?
Joe Rogan?
Joe Rogan, not Bernie Sanders.
Oh, I thought you meant there is a Bernie Sanders podcast.
That would be amazing.
That would.
Oh, it's got to be like.
I feel like that would do well.
It's got to be like bread recipes and like how to make your own kombucha.
Yeah.
It would be amazing. Mm. Yeah, like I didn't think poorly of Bernie Sanders before at all, but I definitely thought a lot more of him afterwards. And then Maynard from Tool announced
that
like that they were going streaming.
Yeah, that's the newest one.
The Joe Rogan podcast. I was like, ooh, exclusive.
And then tweeting it like,
yeah.
Joe's like, are you doing it right now? And he's like, well, yeah,
yeah,
doing it.
The Dr. Phil one he did was good.
I haven't heard that one.
It's like real Dr. Phil.
Yeah, no, I remember listening to that one. It's interesting because he gives his take on all that stuff.
That's interesting.
And he's a really normal guy in the podcast.
Yeah.
I think that's one of the really cool things with his podcast and long form podcasts is people get to kind of relax a little and be themselves in a way that they can't in like really short form interviews.
Right. Or if you have a camera in your face.
Right.
It's totally a little different. Right.
For sure. Yeah. Well, that's definitely what I enjoy about us doing this is it's just raw. We do very little of any editing.
Yeah.
Just kind of get to be ourselves. Last week was really cathartic.
It was.
We needed it.
We did. We kind of had a busted sprint.
Yeah.
You know, wasn't terrible. But you know, it was mediocre at best. And I strive for excellence at all times.
Yep. And what's the secret to overcoming a busted sprint?
Perseverance.
Yes. But I was also going to say,
I felt the pressure, pointed a finger at me, and I was all like,
my bad.
Perseverance. Hang in there. Hang in there like a little kitten on the thing.
Oh, I was also going to say, taking on less points in the next sprint.
Yeah.
And it worked.
No, that's great advice. Yeah. You hear that, everyone? That's what you do. You have a busted sprint, take on less points on the next one.
We crushed this sprint.
We did.
And we still got a day.
We're still crushing it. We're still doing it.
Man.
Yeah.
Overestimate, over deliver.
There you go. Nothing goes wrong with that at all. No. You just don't see your wife or friends.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you drink yourself to sleep.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you look on your computer.
Yeah. Yeah. Just saying you twitch and go like, I don't know, 500 error. Huh. Yeah.
You jolt awake at night because it won't load in your dream.
That can be rough. So so we were more honest this go around, but that's what happens. That's kind of the great thing about an agile process, though. You can reevaluate and make adjustments.
Mm. The retrospective was very introspective.
Yes, it was. It was.
We thought about life a lot.
Yeah.
But it was a good week. I was talking with someone. We had someone come in the office just to hang out for a bit earlier, and I was talking with them about one of the things that I'm realizing is this project has a lot more discovery than we had anticipated.
Yeah.
Because one of our main stakeholders is a fairly competent technical person, but they don't have extensive knowledge of the tools. They're aware of tool sets and open source technologies that can be utilized to do these really amazing things, but they've never implemented them, and they don't know how they need to be implemented. And so it was easy. I think it was easy for me at first, and I think we all kind of did this to some degree, to kind of give a little extra weight to their appraisal of the situation and like the information they gave us without vetting it and then going, sure. I mean, if so-and-so says it'll be this way, then it'll be this way. And then in the process of trying to implement that those technologies or that software, we're finding, oh, well, actually. And so we're gaining. I mean, I feel like I'm gaining a ton of knowledge about, particularly about location-based, like GIS software and interacting with geospatial stuff, which is really cool. And
it is.
Like, Alan's becoming a wizard over there at putting things on maps.
Yeah. Stuff, getting them dots on there.
Yeah. Dang, stuff we've
Alan's
never done.
Putting Fayetteville on the map.
Oh.
But I'm not. It's someplace in like central Arkansas that I'm putting on the map.
Buddy has done it.
I have.
He's done it.
Yeah. I was messing around with it last night. Actually, like putting my neighborhood on the map, and then was just like, wait a minute, I got a data sample, and I put those coordinates in.
That's right. You pulled your from the data
because I have no idea where this farm is.
Right.
You know, and then I put it in, and then like bam, there it is next to the dirt road, and it's, you know, you can see the field there, and so
that's awesome. I didn't realize that you just put in, I mean, of course it makes sense that you put in the lat longs and it pulled up those coordinates on the map.
Yeah.
That's literally what those are for.
It is, but.
But for some reason in my brain, I was just like, did you have his address? Like, right? It just didn't occur to me.
Right?
Yeah. Because I was like.
That's a whole nother problem to solve, putting in an address and getting lat long, you know.
We don't have that problem.
No.
We won't introduce that problem yet.
No. Well, that's not what, you know, that's not what this app's really about, but.
Very true.
Yeah, it's still, and I think that's good to be excited about the technology and to still see it as like magic, basically. That's the way I was so excited last night. I was in like a city council meeting, like writing code, and then I'm just like, oh, I can barely sit in my chair. Like they're arguing about stuff getting built. I'm like, progress. You don't try to stop it. I'm like, but I did some stuff.
That's funny.
I did some stuff. Like show my wife. She's all like, that's Google Maps. I'm like, I know, but I put them dots there.
That's awesome.
That's great.
Yeah. And city council meetings are boring enough that that kind of stuff really would be the highlight.
Yes. 100% true.
Man.
Yeah.
Fulfilling your civic duty and going to a city council meeting is next level.
Yeah. Yeah. My wife's, she's on she's the head of the Parks Committee.
Oh.
So
she's Leslie Knope of.
She surely is.
Arkansas.
I remind her that she is.
That's awesome.
She loves that show too. Right. So it's a massive compliment for her.
So you're Ben Wyatt.
For some reason, I hadn't thought of that yet, but yeah, I guess so.
He is a tremendous. Do you enjoy Twin Peaks as much as he does?
I want to, but probably not.
I've wanted to enjoy Twin Peaks. I've rewatched like the first 4 or 5 episodes.
Have you ever
rebooted it?
Have you ever watched the whole thing?
Uh-uh.
I know. Me neither.
Like a whole season.
I do love that show.
You're a big fan of Twin Peaks. Yeah. Is it worth the investment? Like, at what point do you feel like, I'll get it? Is it one of the things where if you don't get it within the first couple of episodes, it's just not for you?
I don't know. I don't think you have to, like, get it.
Uh-huh.
I just liked it. I liked the twists and turns, and I liked the atmosphere.
Yeah. Oh, it was really good atmosphere.
Yeah,
did
very unique.
Did you like his movies? Like, did you like Mulholland Drive and was it Lost Highway? Have you seen those?
I haven't seen Lost Highway.
You should check those out.
Trent Reznor did the...
The soundtrack. Oh, yeah. But Perfect Drug was like the big song that came out for that.
And that was like... And now it's like, well, yeah, he does soundtracks. But that was before he had done soundtracks. Mm-hmm. And I have that. It's funny. I have that soundtrack because of a Perfect Drug, and I haven't seen that movie yet. It's streaming somewhere right now. I saw it. I mean to watch it.
I saw it in high school. And there's like this whole collection of movies I saw in high school that I had no appreciation for because I was a high school student.
Sure.
I know I saw that movie, but I didn't understand any of it. And I didn't care. And it was everything. Rushmore. Like, I remember when I saw Rushmore, the Wes Anderson movie in high school. I was like, that was the stupidest movie ever. That was a complete waste of time. I was mad my friends had drugged me over to watch it at their house. And now I go back and watch them like, this is genius. This is awesome.
Yeah.
And I loved Royal Tenenbaums later when I saw it and then kind of enjoyed them from there. But at the time, I just didn't have the refined cinematic palette.
I suppose not. Yeah. I'm coming around. My wife's a big Wes Anderson fan. And so I've come around because like Life Aquatic, I thought was dumb, but
oh man,
but I've come around. I appreciate it though now.
Bill Murray looks like my uncle Lonnie in that movie. Lonnie is a fisherman.
Ah,
retired. He is the spitting image of my uncle Lonnie in that movie. Like just the whole time, I'm just like, I got to get my uncle one of those orange or red beanies.
Beanie, yeah.
So that he'll look like Steve Zissou.
Love Bill Murray though.
That's good. Well, we got a new patron we want to be thankful for.
Yeah, let's do a shout out.
Yeah. We got to give a shout out to Steve Inkpen. That is an awesome name, Steve. We're glad.
I hope it's your real name.
Yep. And if not, it's
a fine pseudonym.
A clever pseudonym for sure. Especially with pen name being the way you say pseudonym. Inkpen. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So now I question you. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I would sell you my RAM charger on the internet with a name like Steve Inkpen.
But thank you.
Yeah. Yes. But we appreciate your contribution, whether you are who you say you are or not.
Absolutely. You know who you are.
Though. Yeah. And if you are plagued with people saying they don't believe that that's your last name, then I will apologize for being insensitive.
And as will I.
Because we have been, if that is actually the case. But if you think that's funny, tell your friend about the podcast.
Cheers.
So. Well, Casey's out. Casey is...
He is traveling.
Yep. He's living that Jeep life.
Where's he going to?
Road tripping.
With the whole family. He is going... I think the end destination is Moab. He's driving to Moab.
Over in Utah.
Yep. And coming back. So I know that a lot of folks get that itch. I bought a Land Cruiser. Yeah, me and old SUVs years ago, and it came with a Moab sticker on the back. And I felt like I was... highly decorated for having that sticker, but I hadn't earned it because I didn't actually go to Moab.
Yeah,
but someone obviously had and may or may not have taken that Land Cruiser. They may have just brought a sticker back from having flown over there for business or something and put it on there. But it seemed to make the vehicle even more legitimate to have that Moab sticker. So I think Casey's going to come back
with covered in stickers.
Yeah, even more bona fide. So.
Yeah. He probably wouldn't. He probably wouldn't put a sticker on the Dragon Jeep.
Yeah, I was about to say. Unless it's a Dragon sticker. If they have Dragon stickers in Moab, he kind of has to.
Yeah.
He is obligated to do so at that point.
There is an obligation. So. Yep. So we wish him well on his journey and hope he has fun. But he is not here with us today.
Yeah. I will be out next week.
Where are you going?
I will be at ElmConf and Strange Loop. And I am super excited.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
I want you to come back and convince us to be an Elm shop.
I'm going to try to.
Let's do it. I've not gotten to play around very much with Elm, but I think I get the basic concept that it compiles down into HTML, CSS, and JavaScript.
Right.
Can you also write your backend in Elm, or is it purely like front end and then it talks to APIs?
Mostly it's front end. I believe you can do back end though. Let me look for Elm MVC just for simplicity
Is there like a preferred back end language people like Haskell? I would assume Haskell.
Yeah, yeah. It's very Haskell-like, so that would be kind of the way that folks do it. I'm going to speak with great ignorance into all things Elm, because I have only briefly gone through like some of the docs and writing stuff as I go. So Man, what's weird is I want to say I don't think that you do anything in the back end in Elm.
Okay.
Yeah, it's but, looking like...
So it's React in that sense, where sure. It's trying to obfuscate the HTML and CSS.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And in that sense, yeah. And so, but I've also seen it seem to be used for so many other things besides, like, it just doesn't seem like a front-end language. But I think that's been so blocked into my brain to be JavaScript-like. Mm-hmm. And any Elm users that are listeners, please come find me at ElmConf and bludgeon me for my ignorance. I will bring a far more educated, because we'll look it up real quick, because I can look at ElmConf and it's not just going to be a bunch of front end.
It's not going to be how to use React in
right.
Elm.
It's not going to be. One sec. I mean, 2019.
Yeah, definitely on their site, lots of all the examples are just front end mm-hmm. stuff. So, yeah, it's kind of how I've thought of it. I haven't mm-hmm. done anything with it, but it definitely seems like basically a framework. Mm-hmm. But it's a language. Have you done anything, Alex, with Elm?
I have not done much with Elm. Mm-hmm. I've looked at it before, but I haven't built anything. It seems like it would be fun.
You've gotten angry at JavaScript too.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
I remember Tyrell just started and like I was working on something and I got so mad at it.
Okay.
And then he was talking about Elm, and so then I spent like 2 hours just looking at Elm like dreaming. Like,
oh yeah.
Yeah. Oh, it could be better. Yeah.
Yeah. Life could be like this.
Oh yeah.
What if somebody wrote a browser that just read this at an interpreter level?
Yeah. I know, right? Yeah.
So I think it actually interesting. So here are the talks in Elm. Here are the talks.
Yeah.
For Elm Conf, and I'm excited for these. But so far, I've only briefly read through them. But they all could still stay a front end thing with these talks. There's writing testable Elm. Obviously, that's no problem.
Seems like a thing testing. You'd want to do. Yeah.
Building highly performant animations in Elm. That's cool. Obviously front end focused. Mm-hmm. A month of accessible Elm. Looking at, I believe it'd be accessibility, not making Elm accessible. Also front end focused, a music theory API with types.
Interesting.
Yep. And so potential, yeah. Programmable web application. So, there's making Elm talk to your supercomputer. So that's back end or it's front end talking to back end, building a game, a music learning game with Elm web MIDI and SVG animation. Apparently they use SVG a lot. I've seen SVG referenced twice now. Game development in Elm. GraphQL. it's literally the only talk that doesn't have the word Elm in it. A 3D rendering engine in Elm. And growing an Elm project with the whole team. So, I've only known Elm as a front-end language. For some reason, it just feels like it can be used for more than that, but I've not seen it. So I will come out of ElmConf with such a greater understanding. I plan to binge code Elm Wednesday night in my Airbnb. Like that's all I'll do.
Absolutely.
Like, great. Just put on some music in. And just go nonstop deep. Cause I will sadly be away from my family. They are wonderful distractions, the distractions nonetheless. And so I'll be able to focus and just go hard in the paint on Elm.
Yeah,
and be rolling like I know what I'm talking about Thursday morning. Yeah. Be like, well, actually, according to the docs, I'll be that guy at all the talks.
Yeah, I love it.
It'll be great.
Fun fact, Elm is the Arabic word for science.
Huh. Ooh, well, I did not know that.
I wonder if they know that.
I would think they know that, but I don't know.
Yeah. That's fun. I like that. That's where I was on a vacation away from my family. And dove into a Spring API to see what that looked like.
Just dove into a Spring of APIs.
I kind of did a Spring API. And yeah, just like whenever I dive into any other framework like that, I'm like, oh, well, that's cool. I could do some CRUD, but now what if I wanted to hook it up to a real database and all that? And
so the first thing you do is go to the Pokemon API.
What can we do with the Pokemon API?
Yeah.
I guess you can build a Pokedex. You can get all kinds of information about your favorite Pokemon.
There's a Star Wars API.
Yeah, there's a Star Wars API.
That's more my speed. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah.
That's interesting. I hadn't even considered that. Yeah, and I imagine they're pretty similar.
Probably, yeah.
Very, very
yeah,
similar.
Yeah, that's APIs. I know the Star Wars one functions as like if you just needed a dummy API to build a front end against and hit, then you could do that. But it's pretty extensive. I imagine the Pokemon's very similar.
Yeah,
but yeah, that sounds great. That's
just something fun to plug into, right? Mm-hmm. It's better than like a lorem ipsum API or something that just returns like a note. I think there's a notes API that just returns random notes. Mm. Like if you're building a to do app.
Oh, gotcha. Yeah.
There is a to do API.
Oh, is it called the to do API? Maybe I'm thinking
there's
of that.
There's JSON placeholder, which is like to do lists.
Mm.
People.
Oh,
really
okay.
Small things, not like Pokedex or anything.
Yeah, really, but like really common things that are in like every single programming tutorial.
Yeah.
It was fascinating to get to. I got to that point, and then I'm like, cool. So ORM, and then that's interesting to see, and then really see how like that environment evolved to where there's not so much an ORM. As like there's this built-in JD something, and Java programmers out there hate me right now probably. but yeah, there's this thing and it just plugs in. It's pretty much like an ORM, uses native like Java classes to build your data models and stuff like that. One of the things I liked about Spring was like that's how you get JSON. You just feed it Java objects and you get JSON. Like there's no serializer like in DRF, you have to do anything like that. It's a little bit more like kind of like Rails does, like just does the models straight across like that. I like that. So that was like the extent of that night. I'm trying to figure out how do I serialize this into JSON, and then realize I was trying too hard. It's like, no, just shove this model right into it and it'll come out JSON. And
there's nothing like that. There's that creeping feeling when you're fighting against something. And you know, like, it shouldn't be this hard. I'm missing something really obvious. I know.
Yeah.
I know this is doable. And you're just like, oh, just literally import this.
Every time I work with the Django router, that's how I feel.
Yeah. Oh, I saw you. You're saying some stuff about that.
Willow knows. Yeah. Oh, so mad.
So you're...
Yeah, I saw the reverse and all that.
Yeah.
Just following the documentation, following examples of other routes being defined. Go into my test, call reverse, want to make just like test this API endpoint. Doesn't work. Hmm. Route doesn't exist. Okay. Start my server. Still doesn't exist. Change the route name around and I just can't get it. And there's no like Rails equivalent to rake routes where you can just print out.
Yeah. All just the routes. Make your routes out.
So I don't know what I'm doing wrong. And then just changing the route until I get the right incantation to get it to work.
If it makes you feel better, I'm still largely that way as well.
Yeah,
I'm a huge fan of the path method that got introduced in Django too. Because
one seems much better.
Get the regex out of my URL.
Yeah, so yeah,
that's another thing on top of it that
I remember like just like staring in confusion when the first time I stepped up to a Django app from Rails, and it was like there's regex here. Why is there regex here? Who I was just like I literally looked around. I was just like, who put regex in the URLs file? And they're just like, that's what we do. It's Django, bro. It's like, wait, what? You actually use regex like this? And I've since eased on it. I still am not a regex guy.
No,
we had a regex guy at Field Agent. It was Mr. Welkley. He's like, oh, I want to write everything in regex and SQL. He's just like, get your code out of my code. Don't talk to me like that.
Yeah.
I still don't really understand regex. Like, I can copy and paste accordingly.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes I get what I expect, but usually I don't.
Yeah. I did something recently that, oh, no, no, it was the phone validation that I implemented in the phone field. I was just like, because I honestly just don't understand. I mean, I principally at a high level understand what regex is doing.
Right.
But I don't know all of the, like, I can't read regex.
Right.
Competently.
Right.
At
right.
All.
Writing regex and reading regex are two completely different things.
Absolutely. And so, like, I had to, I did the copy and paste of faith and was just like, are you going to do what you say you're going to do? Because I'm not going to spend the next 45 minutes trying to read this regex line.
Right.
And so it seems to be working well.
That's really why I don't understand it. I've never had to. I usually can find something on Stack Overflow that gets me close enough. And I've just never, and then I go, whew, oh, good, that worked. And I never, I've just never taken the time to do a deep dive on regex.
I've done the deep dive, and it gets really squirrely really quickly.
Okay,
I can imagine.
Good to know.
When you're reading it, it's not. You have to pay very special attention to the position of everything.
Mm-hmm.
So, kind of in the way that SQL gets evaluated from like the outside in, when you're looking at the regex, you're seeing each individual character and you're like, okay, I know what that means. I know what that's looking for. But depending on that particular order, the order that it's in, it could be searching for a thing, trying to match on something, or maybe it's not trying to match on something, or maybe it can become very confusing very quickly. Which is obviously why none of us want to write them, read them.
So here's what's interesting. You mentioned, you compared it to SQL, and I mentioned how Jeremy loved putting regex and raw SQL in my Django app, and I would chew him out for it. I'm texting him. This is my Maynard moment. I'm texting him in the middle of the podcast to tell him in 2 weeks he has to come on the podcast and defend regex and SQL.
Yep, we're tearing it apart right now.
Texting you in the podcast.
I actually don't hate SQL. I know a lot of people hate SQL and wish ORMs would just take over the world, but I don't mind it so much.
I'm glad that, you know, ORMs exist and I don't have to do everything with it.
Yes.
But yeah, I'm kind of the same way. I like it. Like, I feel like sort of like a lot of bash. Like, I feel like there's kind of this ugly, beautiful thing about, you know, a good SQL query. And I'm thankful I don't have to write every one of them from scratch, but I'm also fascinated with them.
I'll agree with that too. Like, I definitely like using SQL in certain contexts.
Yeah, it's got its place.
Yeah, especially if you just need to get to the data. But it's when you're going around the ORM and building SQL, unless you've got like tangible proof of like this performance increase that I get.
Yeah, right. Like, I don't want to be mixing them often,
right?
Or really at all. I don't want to do like my model dot objects dot filter and then be typing a string of like where this is that limit that.
There'd be an F. It's an F function. No,
there's.
You could do a small version of that with an F. What am I missing? An F there, object.
And there's
object, I think so. Function.
The F.
It's the F object. It's not the Q object. That'd be an F object, I'm pretty sure. But yeah, you could shoehorn that stuff in there that way.
I think the F function is kind of new. Newer?
Oh, I'm going to...
And then, yeah.
I must beat down all of my own ignorance.
Google it.
Yep. F object is for...
Because I was trying to do a thing one time, and that's, we were talking about earlier, the first Stack Overflow question I did was a Django ORM question, where I was like, here's what I want to do. How can I do this with the Django ORM? And somebody showed me an example, and then was like, oh, and in the next release, there'll be these like F function things. I was like, well, that'll be awesome. So can we speed up time? And so, yeah, I forget what I had to do, but it wasn't fun. But I didn't write raw SQL.
Nice. It is not the F object, and I have failed as a Django developer. Well, that's a shame.
But thank God
Casey wasn't here to fire me.
Yeah, there is a function though that you can use in the ORM to pass raw queries through, and they're like, never do it.
Yeah.
but it's here.
here's this tool. Yeah. So that's made to cut toes off. Don't cut your toe off.
Think about yourself. Think about what you're doing.
Does F stand for function or fuck? I have to use this.
It's a great philosophical question.
Yeah. Yeah. Why not both?
Yeah. Indeed. Indeed.
So I actually looked just a moment ago, speaking of like multitasking and looking at different things. I drank an energy drink before we came in here. So, yeah.
He gets faster and I get slower while I drink this beer.
We are ships passing in the night. Uh-huh. That's not the right expression.
Is it not?
We're going different directions. So I guess maybe.
I mean, at some point we passed. I think we already passed.
I mean, I'm just a ball of words right now. They don't have to make sense. I'm just filling disk space on a hard drive the podcast.
You're doing very well at it.
I try. Whatever. So I am hoping to some degree that I'll be able to podcast from Strange Loop next week.
Yes.
I don't know how likely it will be that I will do that because there are two back-to-back space-related talks. One is Uptime, 15,364 Days, The Computers of Voyager. Wow. And so it's going to talk about Voyager 1 and 2.
No, do that.
I'm going to do that.
Yeah.
And then coming out of that one, it ends at like 10 minutes after 4. It's like, oh, I might be able to make it. But the keynote for the day is about Astrea Graph monitoring global traffic in space. So that's also a space-related talk.
Yeah.
I don't know about making the podcast.
I would go see how they track.
I might just
traffic.
Yeah, I might just pipe in some of it. I'll just sit in the back with my phone, just like letting you guys listen in.
Yeah,
you'll get a free keynote.
We can determine what we use or something. Maybe. Well, we have to use this recorder.
Yeah.
So I was going to say, otherwise we'd just have you record. Use your phone.
Yeah. Well, I can. We might figure out something. Yeah. Record at a different time or whatever, because it'll definitely be a point. And I mean, we even had this just at Tech Fest, which is one day. I'm going through 3 days of conference. My brain is going to be putty at some point, and I'm not going to want to hear anybody say another word about any kind of technology. Yeah. And I hope Friday is, I've not got to that point by Friday, because I'll have a whole another day to get through. But we'll see. But there'll definitely come a point when I'm just like, all done talks, all done computers. I'm going to just go lay here on the ground for a while.
Try to defragment it all. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But on the way there, after that's finished and you've come back, we're expecting to do App and Elm, Pokedex app, Star Wars app.
Mm. Yeah. I can't do a to-do app and Elm. I can't bring myself to do the to-do apps, although I should. Like, that's a really clear, good way to do it.
Does crud.
We had a guy come in that we were talking to about potential employment, and what was it he kept rebuilding? There's an app. There's a basic functionality. Oh, I think it was an interface for the MLB, that interface with the MLB API, and he would just rebuild it anytime he wanted to learn a new language. He would just rebuild this basic app he had built in the new language, and I thought that was brilliant. And of course, that's a commonly done thing. For some reason, I hadn't ever thought about the fact that everybody just rebuilds to-do apps. Mm-hmm. It's kind of a variant in that. It just kind of became the basic thing to do, kind of in the same way that when MVC frameworks really blow up, it's just like, how to make a blog in this? How to make a blog in this? Yes. How to make a blog in this? It's like, thanks, DHH. Five minute Rails blog.
The what was his name? Kevin something?
I want to say Mitnick, but that's not it.
No.
I
gotta look it up.
I have one.
I know a local Kevin, but
I've got like this card deck kind of app that I do in different languages. At least if they're object oriented, I can do it in like, because I can have a card object, then a deck, and then
yeah, that makes sense.
Kevin Skoglund.
Mm.
Yeah, he back in the day he had a lot of Rails tutorials that were really popular, both on Lynda. And
that name sounds really familiar to me.
Yeah, you probably read his tutorial on how to write a blog in Rails, because that was like the hot stuff.
Maybe that, but it seems like he did some other tutorials in another language or something.
Very, very possible.
Maybe like PHP or something.
Could be. I'm seeing Kevin Skoglund on lynda.com. It's like all kinds of Git tutorials, web security, Git essentials. There's some Ruby stuff, PHP. Yeah, seems to do a lot of tutorials and things. Learning Sinatra.
The main person I associate with Rails tutorials, well, there's two of them. One of them's obviously Ryan Bates. The other's Greg Pollock. Because Rails Envy got bought by Rails for Zombies and all that. Which was Code School.
Bought
by Lynda.
Lynda bought Code School, really?
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
Yeah.
I didn't know. How did I not know that?
I don't know, but Ryan's living off that acquisition money. Or not Ryan. Greg's living off that acquisition money down in... Oh, Pluralsight bought him. Down in Florida, because they're from Florida. Oh,
okay. Mm. Yeah, when I was starting off, I used Code School a lot.
Mm-hmm. Did you do Rails for Zombies?
I did Rails for Zombies. I did Rails for Zombies 1.
Yeah.
And then when 2 came out, I did that one. And I think I had already surpassed Code School when number 3 came out.
Yeah. I did the RSpec one.
Ooh, nice.
I have the theme song for that stuck in my head. Now
they're really creative.
It. Yeah, yeah.
They're really great.
When I bought my package, we bought it for a company I was CTO for at the time. We were using it as part of our intern apprentice program. We would have them pairing part time and going through Code School tutorials at the time. And when we bought it, they gave us a zip file of all the music. They're just like, here, listen to the theme songs for all these courses. Just like, that's crazy. And then you're listening, you're just like, that's not bad.
Yeah.
I'm not going to put it on my phone, but every once in a while I'll find it on my computer and be like, oh yeah, those. So that's why I say I've got the RSpec theme song.
I think
stuck in my head.
They had people working at Code School who, like programmers who knew how to play instruments, and they just recorded those theme songs.
That would make sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I tried to type Code School and typed Chode School.
Oh, don't hit enter on that one.
Nope. That would not end well.
Oh, stop it, imagination. Quit it.
I can't. I was hoping to find it so that I could. I've got to track it down some other time and pipe it in for the intro. Although it's going to be hard to beat the War Stories intro.
It is, but, you know, we'll do it one day. We'll beat that intro.
Yeah.
Maybe not today, but there'll come a day.
Did you guys see that the beta version of Python 3.8 is hitting a beta preview has come out this week.
And first thing on the list is variable assignment to the return value of like if statements.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome.
Yep.
Is that a Ruby thing?
It's a Rubyism. Yeah.
Explain it to us Python cave people.
Okay. So imagine you're writing a programming language that doesn't make you write everything yourself. Kidding. Anyway.
We're kind of doing that now.
We're
already there.
That's what interpreted languages are for.
Yes. Okay. Normally in Python, if you you'll do something like set a variable equal to the return value of a function. Mm-hmm. You'll call a function and set it to a variable. And then you'll do, if this thing is not none, then do this other thing.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And you kind of nest it.
Yep.
The new syntax will let you do that all on one line.
Mm.
So you can do like,
I feel my eye twitching a little bit.
Yeah, it'll be like you'll need to pull the syntax up exactly, but you like call the function and set it to a variable, and then nest the functionality you want. And if it's not none, then it'll call the block below it.
Interesting.
With giving you that variable as a reference.
I feel like I could like that. I just need some time with it. Yeah.
It looks better than how I'm explaining it.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that was quite the ask.
Yeah.
Well, I was looking at it though, and I was trying to understand it, but then I was all like, that looks Ruby-ish. It's the
colon equals, I think they got from Go, but the concept, they have that in Ruby as well, where you can say, you can basically say, maybe it is different in Ruby. Maybe I'm mixing it up. In Ruby, you can do the thing where it's like variable equals a whole if else statement, and then the variable will get set to whatever gets returned from the if else.
You can do that in Python too.
You can do it, but
I do it all the time in JavaScript though.
Yeah. I think this is allowed with a method call in a way that wasn't before, because it's like, so with the way it used to be would be match equals, match, like the match method. And then this is literally me reading the PEP proposal.
So, yeah.
Oh, we've gone from like party down to like reading PEP proposals.
This is PEP. For everyone listening, this is PEP 578.
Indeed. Then it's, I need to like do a dramatic, we need Casey to come read it like Morgan Freeman.
Yeah.
But then it would be group equals match dot group if match else none. So that's two lines. Now it would be group equals match method dot group one if match method else none. So it is reducing the complexity when it comes to checking stuff.
Yeah, one of the examples I'd read earlier was showing how people would do that and then put the if statement like at the end of it, which apparently is like less performant with the Python interpreter than if you had just spelled it out. I guess this is what this is trying to cater to, that they realize programmers like less lines, even if it's not as performant like we feel like it is. It's like, look, I use less lines.
Yeah.
But it still gets interpreted. So that's one. 578.
I'm looking at another that I think is interesting, but I want to be able to speak to it.
Well, I hope it's as riveting as 578.
No kidding. It's typing related, and I have a very, I enjoy typing at a distance. Like, I love the concept of typing, and that's part of why I like Elm.
Yeah.
This is statically typed. I mean, it's statically typed. So a whole swath of errors. It just goes away.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because you know what you're getting.
You appreciate it being there.
Yeah.
You just don't want to ride it every day.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I would like, I want to have my cake and eat it. I want to have my types and eat them too.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I like a type, but don't make me write types.
How about a compiler that compiles a non-typed language to a typed language?
Nice.
That's dumb, right?
Yeah. So here, it's typed dictionary. So you can define a typed dictionary and define what the value is and the key value. So, for example, like right now, you would statically
type. Like I could do empty string.
Yeah.
Like,
name equals string, year equals int. And you would define it that way. And it would allow for that static, it would allow it to be static there. That's it. For whatever purposes you have static things in your life.
I don't know. It seems more like the type hinting thing in there that they have in there. I was looking at some of that syntax and stuff in there.
Well, they're definitely bringing in typing elements into Python.
Which scares me a little.
Scares you a little?
I feel like types versus non-types is really controversial and very opinionated. A lot of the time, sometimes opinionated, sometimes data-driven. But one thing that I think every programmer could get behind would be something that would throw a syntax error or something like a compile-esque error if your function returns more than one type of thing.
Yes.
You don't have to explicitly define what it is. Like, I'm not, I don't want to be like def array, def null.
Right.
But if I could get some kind of warning, similar to like a linting error, that, hey, this function you just created has, if this return a string, else return none, or else return
a number,
an array. In my mind, is like a big no, don't do that.
Yeah, for sure. That's actually really good and kind of surprising that we don't have to some degree.
Mm.
And would fix a lot of problems that that types also fix.
Man.
Mm. Yeah, that's a good, you know, like back to that Spring app, like there's some stuff in there, though, that I look at the types and I'm kind of like, I mean, it does make sense that here's some variables that will go into this function or this, you know, object declaration, and I know what they will be even. Mm-hmm. I even know what it will return. Like, you know, it scares me a little bit, like if Python ever became statically typed in some way. I know, just because of the change of all that.
And we all know that Python is not scared to make some of them breaking changes.
Yeah, or they're just like, we do types
Python
now.
4, we're statically typed now, and deal with it.
So
that would be the most baller move. Just like, we don't even care.
Just deal with it.
Python 4 statically typed, good luck, have fun.
Thank you.
And then two years later,
PEP 666. Statically typed.
Yeah. And then 3 years later, someone would come out with a tool to like convert your thing to statically typed.
Yeah. Yeah. And then that would get, you know, that'd be in Python 5.
Every file is like import static, how does? And like, it just does it.
Could you imagine having to upgrade a project from Python 3 to 4?
No.
Kind of change.
Oh, man.
Well, that's where I'd hope it would have the import future kind of a thing there.
Like, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. You'd have to, like, okay.
That would be a service worth paying for.
You would have to read every method.
Yeah.
And ensure that
every
it's
method, every
passing.
Every variable declaration just about. Yeah, that would be rough. That would be line by line.
You should be able to. I bet there would be a way to infer that. And insert it, basically like some of the stuff that came out for the conversion issues of 1 to 2 or 2 to 3, excuse me. There's got to be a way to like parse for linting, but read through and determine the type that is returned or the type that is declared, and then prefix that into surely it would be prefixed because definition type method name.
Yeah. And that's kind of, I guess that's sort of kind of what I hoped for, something like that with the type hinting that they introduced in 3.3.5, I think, 3.6. But yeah, and then API star was using that to do serialization.
Yeah.
Which was interesting. But yeah, I guess they're not doing that anymore. I haven't checked on API star in a while. I just did a talk on it and then went and checked on it one time to like do a toy project, and they were like, oh, we just do JSON schema generation now.
Yeah, they basically like, I don't want to deal with this anymore.
Yeah, Tom Christie pivoted real quick. Like, I mean, everyone's still using DRF, so. Yeah.
It's good stuff.
Yeah.
And we are very thankful for it.
That is very true. I'm using DRF today.
We've still got to figure out a way to get Tom Christie on the podcast.
Yeah.
That would be he's the white whale. He is the Moby Dick of Friday afternoon.
He's a mythical creature. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Hopefully he won't rip one of our arms off. No. Or legs. Excuse me. How dare I? How dare I?
As someone did you even study literature?
I was about to say, as someone who's read Moby Dick twice, once in an academic setting,
dare
I mess that up?
Oh, and once for fun, apparently.
Yeah, once for fun.
Wow.
And then once for academics.
Seen a couple of movies.
I have Moby Dick, the card game. That's how much I enjoyed it. It's a fun game.
I bet.
It is.
What's not to like?
I mean,
hunting a mythical whale and
not a whale hunting.
Destroying yourself in the process.
Yeah, you actually cannot. The way you win is to be the last person to die. you can't. You can't survive. You can't. You cannot survive the game. You just have to be the last person living.
That's awesome.
And that. That
that's
kind
like
of,
that's like life, I think. Okay. You know, I just want to be, I want to live the longest of my generation if I can. Maybe. I don't know. I haven't got to towards the end. I may sing a different tune by then. Get me out of here.
Yeah, I've had moments now at this stage in my life as a 37-year-old man where I've been like, I could see not really being too concerned about continuing to live. I'm like, yeah. I could see it coming to a point where I'm just like, eh, whatever.
I've had a good run.
Yeah.
I've got a lot done. And I know. Interesting how, I'm the same way. And I attributed it to like, well, I'm staring down 40. And I guess you just start thinking about that.
Yeah. On a non-depressing note.
Yeah, this took a dark turn.
But turning back towards, we were talking about like linting and potential linting and stuff. There's also a whole bunch of improvements to Visual Studio Code.
Ah, yeah.
In relation to their Python package that I thought were pretty sweet. Mostly, like, we talked about this because I came from a shop before here that was heavily relied on the tooling that came with... PyCharm. And I was really resistant coming from a Rails background. I was Sublime Text or Death.
Right.
Get your IDE out of here. I don't want anything to do with that.
Or Vim.
I Vimmed.
I remember Sublime Text.
Stuff. Yeah. I love that you say that as a Vim guy. You're just like, yeah. I listened to that Pearl Jam for a while, but then I just went back to... You know, Zeppelin.
I thought Sublime was cute.
Yeah. I mean, that one song is pretty good, I guess. I mean, they're kind of talented.
So Willow's been learning Vim now.
Yeah, that's right. You're pairing with the Vim master himself.
I had to ask because she was using a high contrast theme on VS Code that I was like, are you Vimming already?
How do you like in Vim?
I think now maybe I can deal with it, kind of.
That's a good answer. That's how I feel about Vim. Yeah, I can exit a terminal successfully now.
getting out of Vim.
I can even write while I do it, or not.
Have you found any shortcuts that you think are pretty like uniquely awesome to Vim yet? Anything that you're just like, oh, that's great. Wish I could do that other places.
I mean, I don't know.
That's all right. Example for me is when you're not in insert mode, when you're in view mode. Yeah.
Yeah.
DD and deleting a whole line, just like whoosh.
That's great.
Yeah,
I love that. I love that. There's like a handful of them.
Yep. And you can delete like whole blocks.
Mm-hmm.
No, I like that. And yep. I need to see you about that sometime.
For sure. And then it gets on the clipboard and you can paste it in other places.
Yep. One day we will all, Alex will convert us all.
Yeah, I feel like we should just have a workshop.
And by the time he gets like half of us converted, he's going to move on to Emacs.
Yeah.
He and Hobbs are going to be down the road programming Emacs.
Yeah. I haven't spent like enough time learning the Visual Studio Code, like a lot of the shortcuts, but I know there's several of them that it's similar. So
does that one have a Vim mode?
I don't know.
Like
I know some
JetBrains. JetBrains had
a Vim mode, and I turned it on for a while, and I was just like, "This just feels insincere, really."
Yes,
this
is. Sublime got a Vim mode as well.
Yeah. I remember that too.
It felt weird. I couldn't really get used to it.
Mm.
What is that like?
It's where you can like use the letters to move the cursor around, and also do some of those shortcuts like delete things and.
Not near as extensive, though.
The delete things, though. So here's what I use Vim for. Is pretty much just rebasing in interactive mode.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that's good. It is good for that.
It's good for that.
That's my favorite.
I use Vim on servers.
I don't
nano.
I used the nano exclusively. Liked it. Like, vehemently, like, I don't need this Vim. And then... I don't know. I spent enough time on the dark side that I couldn't even nano. Here a while back, I was on a server, didn't have Vim, didn't want to install it, which was like, yeah, I mean, I've used nano. I can figure this out. And I did, but
you take 2 minutes,
felt gross
to install
and wrong.
Vim.
And yeah, that's. But then they have the, you know, then you're like, exit, X to exit. And then it's like, you made some changes. You really want to exit? Would you like to name the file this? I'm like, yeah, just get me out of here. Yeah. I know what I'm doing. Get me out of here. Stop asking me questions at the door. Like, Vim's all like, I'm doing whatever you said to do.
Yeah.
Now, maybe, unless you don't know the password, then we're going to sit here in this terminal until you know how to quit.
Well, once I learned the secret shortcut to getting out of Vim quickly, I've been all for it. Then
Q-bang.
Get stuck.
Q-bang, get me out of here.
Well, was it Shift Control ZZ, I believe.
Yeah.
That is just like out of there and right.
I think that's an alias for like.
Go there.
Oh, does that one write?
This mm-hmm. ZZ? Yeah, it saves it and everything. Mm. It's nice.
That's right. WQ.
WQ. Like that's the one I was pulling up. Oh, here they are. Okay, cool. No, one of the things that I think is really sweet is with the new one, at least from Jupyter notebooks.
Yeah.
I think with other stuff, it lets you dive into not your code, like basically source code or methods that you're using. So you can, in your debugging, you can jump into third-party code, which is huge.
Because
that was something that I missed big about time PyCharm, from right? PyCharm.
Yeah.
Was I could just jump into the standard library or I could jump into this third-party app and I knew I could read that code. And I learned a ton there because that was one of those things that I really liked about Python coming from Rails.
Going to VS Code, I've had to get used to, and at least in Chrome, I can do like GitHub space and then whatever I'm searching for, but I've gotten used to, unfortunately, of just looking up source code on GitHub and reading it that way.
It's not as
with
great.
No syntax highlighting or anything. Yeah.
So that's a pretty sweet feature.
That is pretty cool.
And the virtual environment one too. You were really excited about
that. Oh, I was. Thank you for reminding me about that. Yeah, so that was one of the other pains that I had about switching from PyCharm, which I still go back to sometimes. But I don't tell anyone. I do that whenever I'm plugged into power and don't care. My machine has all the juice it needs because, boy, PyCharm will eat it up quick. You got PyCharm and Chrome running?
Oh, man, yeah.
And Docker? Oh. Forget about it. You're not watch your machine anything. Melt.
Yeah. Just nonstop fans.
Yeah. What's happening to all my memory? Just run your software.
If the whole shop ran PyCharm, it would just sound like a jet engine studio in here. Just like all of us are like...
Yeah, I know. You go to fire it up and it's got the index everything. And it's...
Hold on a second. I need to know where everything's at again.
I just need to, I just wanted to edit one line, one line of text. You don't have to index everything, and you can turn that.
Especially if it's been a while,
you can turn that off. But then why not just use Vim at that point?
That's why I never wanted to close it. You left it running all the time because you know if I close this, and I reopen it, I've got to go get a coffee because it's going to reindex and take forever.
Yeah. But
super useful at that point. But until then, it's dead.
So what it looks like VS Code's implementing now is, so in Python we use virtual environments, and some people use the virtualenv and virtualenv wrapper. I've been a big fan of, in Python 3 they just have the vmv as a module right in there, and so I've gotten into the habit of, I have a project directory, I put my virtual environment in there, and then I just git ignore it. But then I know where it is. It's right there. And if I wanted to nuke it like node modules, I can and start over. But PyCharm would detect it and then automatically use that as the interpreter. And so it's not griping at you like, I don't know what Django is and stuff like that.
Right.
So VS Code, I have this gist for this workspace, this very elaborate JSON workspace that's set up with all my Django settings and the linting that I do want. And but it looks like now VS Code will be able to detect that because they were already detecting, and this may or may not have influenced why I looked at PyEnv or PipEnv. It automatically used PipEnv, and if you had PipEnv in your project, it would automatically use that. So it's cool that they're going to use the BEnv like that. That's a nice little...
I like it. It seems like something you would want to just kind of come out of the box.
Yeah, right? Yeah. So otherwise, you got to, like I said, configure that. There's been lots of times I've gotten into a thing, and again, just wanted to maybe edit one line, and then it's all like, I don't know. What's Django? Like,
we all know what Django is now, by now. Come on, this is not new.
And then I got to go and look it up because then I start second guessing myself of like, I mean, ah, crap. Is it? Is that it? Is that? Ah, now I got to go look that up. Oh, just need me some autocomplete.
Yeah. Autocomplete.
Autocomplete.
I missed that. I missed that.
Mine is weird because sometimes it'll autocomplete and then sometimes it'll just decide to not.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Hmm. Yeah. VS Code's wonky like that sometimes. Okay. That's where you go get some coffee. PyCharm's indexed everything. It knows things you don't know about the code base. Yeah. Like it's, you know.
You click that and literally like your speakers kick on and Guido tells you what it is.
One of my favorite things that today, if I had a project that I had to work on for like a year and it was very heavy Django template oriented, I would buy a license for PyCharm and use PyCharm. Because PyCharm Professional Mode will like give you syntax like auto completing in a Django template.
Yeah.
Which is amazing.
Yeah. We used and misused templates quite a bit where I was before and it was helpful for that for sure.
Right.
Like it makes big monolithic code bases very manageable.
It does, right? Cool. Makes you feel like a wizard. Yeah. Because it'll do, you know, you can do querying in the template and like it'll auto suggest like, you know, what you're trying to do in the text.
On VS Code, you can switch between the just regular HTML so you can get like your classes, like all your divs and all that stuff to autocomplete. And then you can also switch it back to like Django HTML is what it's called. And then you can get all your if statements and all that stuff to autocomplete.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. That's helpful as well.
Yeah.
But it's not very good at introspecting the ORM statements that you might be trying to do.
I still think to your point though, Willow, like there's definitely stuff I haven't even utilized in VS Code because it's, I think because PyCharm just forces it all on you and they're just like, here's all this stuff, use it, bro. Whereas VS Code is just real laid back. It's just like, hey, I see you got you a file open there. You know we got an extension for that?
Yeah.
Cool. We'll put it right over there for you.
Click here. We'll just open it up. We'll install it.
Oh, that's a YAML file. we got a YAML config too. You want that? You want that extension? Then it's just like,
the salesman that follows you around the store, just being like, exactly. Hey, well, we've got peanuts on sale here.
Oh yeah, exactly. It's like, .rb. Well, okay, yeah, we got that one too.
Yeah. See, you've put some milk in your car. Would you like some eggs to go with that? Yeah. It's two for one.
This chocolate syrup goes real well with that milk.
Oh, so you got some ice cream. It'll go good with that too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But then it doesn't tell you what all is in the extension.
No. Yeah.
It's just like, hey, use this. I'm like, okay, sweet. And it's cool. Yeah. Glad you downloaded that thing.
At least look at this. I always look at the stars
that's a good point.
Yeah, that's sketchy. I'm not going to do that.
It's kind of like my relationship with Steam. I have so many Steam games that I've never played for more than an hour. That I bought because they were on super sale during Steam summer sale. And it's just like, I've got icons. I love this icon collection I have.
Yeah.
Don't these look awesome?
Yeah. Now I know what files these are.
Yep.
Confession, I've never used VS Code before. Mm. Should I try it?
No, just stay
in Vim. No, dude.
Stay in Vim, man.
No, you know Vim, man. Like, what's...
Okay, never mind.
Yeah,
we don't want to...
No, that's, you know, there's something admirable about it, and I look over there, and I'm just jealous, so just keep that going.
Keep doing what I'm doing.
Although, one day, we probably do need to make you use VS Code for a week and then come on the podcast and complain about it for an hour.
Okay, yeah.
Not, I was about to say, not in the midst of anything... Any heavy lifting?
What if we
project wise?
What if we did? We should figure out a thing to do where like you use VS Code for a week, and it's going to need to be something where I ain't got any deadlines.
and you use Vim for a week.
And I use Vim for a week.
I really like that.
And see how far both of us get.
Yeah.
Like,
okay.
I feel like you would get further with VS Code than I would with Vim.
That'll have to be during one of our downtimes, like between projects. Like,
yeah.
Like this one's finished, but this one launches next Tuesday. So here's a week. Everybody, you know, relearn their tools.
Yeah.
You know what editor has the worst autocomplete though? Adam.
Oh, yeah.
I hate Adam's autocomplete much.
Adam was such a good thought.
It was neat.
So actually, I when I switched to, when I made the jump from PHP to Ruby, Megan's going. I don't know if we've talked about Megan yet in the podcast.
I don't know, but we have now.
We got a new team member, Megan, who's taking care of a lot of administrative stuff for us. She's awesome. We're going to drag her onto the podcast eventually after she's been around us enough that she can have semi-informed opinions about how weird we are and get her take on the weird things we say.
Especially during the podcast.
Yeah, absolutely.
It did not look as funny on Monday.
Yep, it'll be good. It'll be like the sales guy episode, except less profane.
I expect it will be.
Less colorful. Less colorful.
Yes, we'll have to do less editing.
Oh, crap. What was I saying, though?
Adam.
No, Adam. Yeah, Adam. So yeah. I actually...
Cool science project.
Yeah, I had a... When I left Ruby... When I left PHP to go to Ruby, I went and lived with a buddy of mine for a week that was a developer at GitHub. And this is up in Indianapolis. And he was using Atom. And it was before they had released Atom. And I was just like... So I basically said, well, I want to kind of... take a lot of hints from what you're doing and your environment and all this stuff. And so I was just like, what's that? He's like, that's Adam. You can't use that. Cause it was just internal. I was like, oh, he's like, you should use Sublime Text. I was like, okay. I think I was using it wasn't Notepad++. Thank God. It was something else. It was, it had a strawberry for the logo, like not phrase not or something. Maybe
phrase. That does sound familiar.
Phrase?
Editor? I was using...
It's probably French or something.
Did you guys ever use brackets?
No.
Don't like brackets.
No, I don't either, but that's what I was using around probably that same time.
Yeah, I used that for like a week, and I was like, no.
Yeah, phrase. Phrase. Phrase.
And I have used...
Strawberry in French.
Yeah. Is it? I have too. Yeah. That Notepad++, I thought... Like, it's funny how it goes. Like, I was using just regular Notepad editor, the Notepad++. And I was like, oh, this is awesome. I don't have to write the other end of my div or any of this other stuff. I was pretty much just editing HTML at the time. Then that's when I started the NTI. Started taking some Chad Kiefer classes and learned about Visual Studio got me a license to the ultimate via Visual Studio Professional, like ultimate edition. I still have that.
Visual Studio is great. Machine.
Yeah.
It's the best IDE ever.
It really is. I think everything else is trying to imitate that. Yep. Except for Vim.
It's almost...
or Emacs.
Yeah. Vim does not care.
No.
Or does Emacs.
No, they don't care about such
things. Yeah. Visual Studio is great.
And then PyCharm, that's when I was like... Because Visual Studio, I felt like, oh, maybe I can write code.
Yep.
And then and then start learning Python, and then I remember Chad's like, and this is PyCharm, and I'm like using it, going, it's kind of weird, but it's like Visual Studio for Python. He was like, exactly.
There you go.
And so I was like, I can write code.
Ruby Minds would have been like the only other IDE. That was not good though.
No,
Ruby Minds was not that good.
I tried it once and just like had like. Some kind of RSpec thing just blowing up at me that I was like, nope. And then I think I used Atom on a little bit of Ruby at that time. But yeah,
it's the difference between a text editor and an IDE.
Yes.
You just have a completely different programming environment set up when you're doing one or the other.
Yeah, totally.
Just got confirmation. Jeremy Welkley will come on the podcast in 2 weeks.
Sweet.
And debate the virtues of regex and SQL.
Defend regex.
Yes, defend its honor. He said he's gonna brush it up on his regex just for the podcast, which is good.
I like it.
Yeah.
So
I like it. Yeah. I just tried to remember to put a dollar sign in there sometimes. I had a thing wall back.
Just randomly. Just like, throw a dollar sign in there. It's not working. Put a dollar sign there.
That's pretty much what it is, yeah. There was
that's the jQuery like working its way into your brain. Well,
I need the dollar. I need it. So,
because back to the URL method in the Django router, which I can't remember if the project you're on is using Django 1 or 2.
It's 1.
I feel your router pain.
Yeah.
Yeah.
One.
Because you start it with a caret, And then you end it with a dollar sign.
Yep. Carrot means the very beginning of the URL text.
That you would, yes.
Yeah, and then the dollar sign is the very end of it.
And then my expertise is in guessing where the dollar sign goes. I know where the carrot goes. Where does the dollar sign go? Maybe it goes here. No. Now do I get my view?
Now does it render now?
No. No.
Oh,
now.
Maybe if I move it here.
Fire up the app.
Well, if I just take it out all together. Like just look for all the things. Like Yeah. So I had something a couple weeks ago, I feel like. Dumb thing I couldn't track down. And it was one of those where Casey comes in, looks at it, and he's all like, "Well, yeah, just move the dollar sign over there." And it works. I'm like,
yeah.
All right. Yeah.
If you're ever interested in just trying to learn some more basic regex stuff, there's this website called Rubular. RUBULAR.
Is it tubular?
No. But it gives you a text box for typing in some random any text that you want, and then a place to type in your regex. And then you can see as you're typing the regex what it matches in the text. Yeah, it'll highlight the text that it'll capture. And then if you put like parentheses and stuff, it'll show you your capture groups, which you can get as variables.
Gotcha.
Each programming language has its own implementation of regex, so sometimes the syntax is slightly different from language, but they're like 95% the same.
Gotcha.
Rubular's is Ruby's implementation of regex.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Again, 95% the same.
That sounds pretty cool, because that's a big part of it. Like, there's a lot of stuff like that I just don't know what it's doing there along the ways.
It's got like a cheat sheet at the bottom of the page that shows what each character is supposed to point to. So you can be like, well, I've got this word, like these are words, and how do I match against those? And
My expertise with it is just doing like a detail view. In Django. And then now I'm gonna need a primary key in here somewhere, and that'll be a number. what's the magic spell for that one?
How does regex number? Yeah. Can I from regex import number? No? Okay, I gotta get it figured out.
That's like the one thing where I would kinda look at the other side of the fence and go like Flask might be onto something, and then I'm all like, yeah, Flask, and then like, but I want to do like user authorization and sessions, and I got to go find those libraries and wire that up myself. Back to Django.
Yep. Hey, come on, what happened to configuration over convention? Right? You're the one. You're the one to make the best decision on the user authorization library your app needs.
Yeah, if I want to.
Django, perfectionist with a deadline.
Yeah. Yes.
There you go.
Indeed. If I need to dive in, I can. Don't make me do it.
Yep. Awesome. All right, guys. Well, it's been a podcast.
Is that a podcast? Yes, all right.
Podcast 30.
Yeah. Podcast 30.
Cool. Everybody have a good weekend. I've already forgotten what I'm going to do, but I'm going to enjoy it.
You're going to do some... Oh, this weekend. Yeah, I don't know what you're going to do.
This weekend.
We're going to be weekending hard this weekend.
I'm going to weekend real hard.
So hard that like Monday is just going to show up and smack me in the face.
Yeah. But it's no longer
sprint planning melee day, melee so Monday.
Great.
No
so
more.
Great. Oh, man. I can't wait to come that's in on good. Monday and not jump
and
right
breathe.
In.
Breathe on Monday morning?
Yeah.
Oh, that's good. Are you guys Melee Tuesday now?
Tuesday.
Oh, Melee Tuesday.
Yeah, we don't have the Monday morning Melee anymore. We have the Tuesday morning Melee.
We can game plan on Monday and approach it like
professionals. Like we knew what we're doing.
Yeah.
Like we're paid to program.
Because like Friday I feel like a professional, and then Monday I'm like, I'm pretty sure I work here.
Yeah.
I have to learn so much again. I feel like every week perpetually.
Yeah. Like, hold on. Now, how do I filter an array?
They start with zero, right? Yeah. Like,
I was starting with one.
Oh, yeah, that's computer science.
All right, let's get out of here and forget how to do our jobs.
All right, see you.
Thanks for listening to Friday Afternoon Deploy, recorded and produced by the team at Lofty Labs. If you enjoyed the show, you can subscribe to future episodes via iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, and Spotify. You can also follow at Friday Deploy on Facebook and Twitter for episode previews, live streams, and other behind-the-scenes peeks. Past episodes and show notes on this episode can be found at friday.hirelofty.com. That's friday.hirelofty.com. If you'd like to contact the show, or if you're local to the Northwest Arkansas area and would like to be a guest on the show, you can email us at podcast@hirelofty.com.